Buck checked into a hotel, a very nice one for a town so far away from the beaten path, and he stowed the remainder of his gear. He bathed, took a shave, and dressed in a dark suit, white shirt with a black string tie, and polished boots. He checked and cleaned his .44s and belted them around his waist, tying down the low-riding holsters. Then he headed for the cafe, preferring that over the hotel dining room. Buck decided to take a seat one table over from Miss Sally Reynolds. They were the only customers in the cafe, the lunch hour being over.
What can I get you, son?
Do you have a lunch special?
Blue plate.
I'll have that and a cup of coffee.
Coming up.
Just then, Buck felt eyes on him, and he looked up, right into Sally's hazel eyes. He smiled at her.
Pleasant day.
Very. Now that school is out for the summer, it's especially so.
I regret that I don't have more formal education. The war between the states put a halt to that.
It's never too late to learn, sir.
You're a school teacher?
Yes, I am. And you?
Drifter, ma'am.
I don't think so.
Oh? And why do you say that?
Just a guess.
Here you go, hon.
Excuse me, I'm sort of hungry.
Oh, please don't let me stop you.
Thank you. What grades do you teach?
6th, 7th, and 8th. Why do you wear 2 guns?
Habit.
Most of the men I've seen out here have difficulty mastering 1 gun. My first day out here, I saw a man shoot his big toe off trying to quick draw. I tried very hard not to laugh, but he looked so foolish.
I would imagine so, but I should imagine the man minus the toe failed to find the humor in it.
I'm sure.
Deputy Rogers entered the cafe then and sat down at the counter. Rogers glared at Sally.
Will you be in very long?
All depends, ma'am.
Lady of your quality, shouldn't ought to be talking to no bounty hunter, Ms. Reynolds. Ain't fitting.
Mr. Rogers, the gentleman and I are merely exchanging pleasantries over lunch. Thank you very much. You were saying, sir?
Rogers flushed, stood, and abruptly left the cafe.
Deputy Rogers doesn't like me very much.
Why?
I probably make him feel somewhat insecure.
A very interesting statement from a man who professes to have little formal education. Mr.
West, ma'am. Buck West.
Sally Reynolds. Western names are very quaint. Is Buck your Christian name?
No, ma'am. But it might as well be. Been called that all my life.
Are you a bounty hunter, Mr. West?
Bounty hunter, cowhand, gun hand, trapper. Whatever I can make a living at. You're from east of the Mississippi River, ma'am.
New Hampshire. I came out here last year after replying to an advertisement in a local paper. The pay is much better out here than back home.
I sort of know where New Hampshire is. I would imagine living is much more civilized there.
To say the least, Mr. West. And also much duller.
Would you walk with me, Miss Reynolds? And please, don't think I'm being too forward.
I would love to walk with you, Mr. West.
The sun was high in the afternoon sky, and Sally opened her parasol.
Do you ride, Miss Reynolds?
Oh, yes, but I have yet to see a side saddle in Bury.
They ain't too common a sight out here.
Ain't is completely unacceptable in formal riding and speech, Mr. West, but I think you know that.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
Sally tilted her head, smiling, looking at him, a twinkle in her eyes.
Which line of employment are you currently pursuing, Mr. West?
Beg pardon, ma'am.
Bounty hunter, cowhand, gunhand, or trapper?
I'm looking for a killer named Smoke Jensen. $30,000 reward for him.
Quite a sum of money. I've seen the wanted posters around town. What exactly did this Jensen do?
Killed a lot of people, ma'am. He's a fast gun for hire, so I'm told.
Faster than you, Mr. West?
I hope not.
Suddenly, a group of hard-riding cowboys burst into town, kicking up clouds of dust as they spurred their horses, sliding to a stop in front of one of the saloons.
Those are men from PSR Ranch, rowdies and ruffians for the most part.
PSR?
Potter, Stratton, and Richards. It's the biggest ranch in the state, I'm told.
How do they get their cattle to market? I know they don't drive them over the divide.
They haven't made any big drives yet. I understand that so far they've sold them to people in this area. Leesburg, Salmon, Limhi. Small communities within a 50 to 70 mile radius. The big drive is scheduled for late next spring. They'll be using 100 or more cowboys.
That's quite an undertaking.
Oh, yes.
A very pretty lady emerged from the dress shop.
Hello, Sally.
The woman gave Buck a cool glance and walked on down the boardwalk.
That is, well, there's no other way to put this. That is Mr. Richards' mistress. Her name is Jane.
Buck had just seen his sister for the first time in almost 10 years.
You have an odd look in your eyes, Buck.
I never have gotten used to being snubbed, I suppose. But I suppose I should have by now. But to be snubbed by a common whore irritates me.
She may be a whore, but she isn't common. I'm told she speaks 3 languages very fluently. Her home is the showcase of the state, and her carriage was built and brought over from France.
Oh.
Buck wondered where in the hell Janie had learned 3 languages. She had quit school in the 8th grade.
Here she comes again.
It was a grand carriage. The coachman was a black man, all gussied up in a military-looking outfit. 4 tough-looking riders accompanied the carriage, 2 to the front, 2 to the back. As the carriage passed, Buck removed his hat and bowed gallantly. Even from the boardwalk, Sally could see the woman in the carriage flush with anger and jerk her head to the front.
Oh, dear. I believe you've made her mad, Buck.
She'll get over it, I reckon.
Buck remembered the time back before the war when he had rocked the family outhouse with his sister in it. She chased him all over the farm, throwing rocks at him.
That funny look is back in your eyes, Buck. What are you thinking about?
My sister.
Does Jane remind you of her?
Not really. I haven't seen the sister I remember in a long time. I'll probably never see that girl again.
Oh, Buck, why do you say that?
There's nothing to return to, Sally. Everything and everyone is gone.
Smoke took her elbow and they began to walk toward the edge of town. 2 of the bodyguards that had been with Jane turned their horses and rode back to face Buck and Sally.
Stand clear. Trouble.
What?
You run on home now, schoolmarm. This here might get messy.
I will stand right here on this boardwalk until the soles of my shoes grow roots before I'll take orders from you, you misbegotten cretin.
What the hell she call me?
Damned if I know.
You insulted Miss Janie, boy. She's madder than a tree full of hornets. You got 15 minutes to get your gear and get gone.
I think I'll stay.
Boy, do you know who I am?
Can't say that I've had the pleasure.
Name's Dickerson. From over Colorado way. That ring a bell in your head?
Nope. Sorry.
And this here is Russell.
Pleased to meet you.
Boy, are you stupid or are you trying to be smart mouth?
Neither one. Now, if you gentlemen will excuse me, I'd like to continue my stroll with Miss Reynolds.
Both Dickerson and Russell dismounted, ground reining their ponies.
Only place you going is Boot Hill, boy. You won't be strolling there.
Several citizens gathered around to watch the fun, including one young cowhand with a weather-beaten face and a twinkle in his eyes.
Stand clear, folks.
The gathering crowd backed up and out of the line of impending fire, they hoped.
I bothered no one, and I'm not looking for a fight. But if I'm pushed, I'll fight. I just want that made public.
Get on your horse and ride, boy, and do it right now.
I'm staying.
You a damn fool, boy. But if you want a lead supper, that's up to you.
Lead might fly in both directions. Were I you, I'd think about that.
Move, Tinhorn, or the Undertaker's gonna be divvying up your pocket money.
I like it here.
Then draw, damn you!
Dickerson went for his gun. Out of the corner of his eye, Buck saw Russell grab for his .45. Sheriff Dan Reese and Deputy Rogers came at a run up the wide street. A bunch of the townspeople had gathered on the boardwalks to crane their necks.
Drop those damn guns, Wes. You're under arrest.
Sheriff, I'd like to know why. Those hooligans started it. They ordered Mr. West to leave town. When he refused, they threatened to kill him. They drew first, and I'll swear to that in a court of law.
The front of Dickerson's shirt was covered with blood. The .44 slug had hit him squarely in the chest, ricocheted off the breastbone, and exited out of the top of his shoulder, tearing a great jagged hole as it spun away. Russell was the hardest hit. Buck's .44 had struck him in the stomach and torn out his lower back. The gun hand was not long for this world, and everybody looking at him knew it.
Any charges, Sheriff?
You're trouble, West, and you and me both know it. I hope you crowd me, gunfighter, because when you do, I'll kill you.
You'll try.
No charges, West. It was a fair fight.
Have Russell's full name recorded. There might be a reward on him.
You are one sorry son of a bitch. Ain't you got no feelings at all?
Only for those who deserve it.
Buck turned and took Sally's elbow.
Shall we continue?
The tall young gunfighter and the pretty lady strolled off. As they passed the young cowpuncher with the weather-beaten face, he looked hard at him. He thought he knew who the gunfighter was, and his name was not Buck West. But Sam thought he'd keep that information to himself for a time. It might just come in handy.
Your first gunfight?
Yes, and I hope my last.
It won't be. Not if you continue living out here. It's a big, wild, raw country still. The laws are simple and straight to the point. Justice comes down hard. Out here, a man's word is his bond. That's the way it should be everywhere. Tin horns, shysters, and crooks don't last long in the West.
And you, Buck?
What do you mean?
Will you last long out here?
No way I can answer that. I hung up my guns once. Thought I would never put them on again. It didn't work out. Maybe I can walk away from it one more time. I don't know. Worth a try, I guess.
This is my house.
Would you like to have supper with me this evening at the hotel dining room?
You're awfully young to have already retired once from gunfighting.
Some of us had to start young, Sally.
Yes, I suppose. It's an interesting land, your Wild West. I'll be ready at 6. Good afternoon, Mr. Buck West, or whatever your name is.
Jane looked out the window of her bedroom. Ever since she had seen that arrogant young man, she had struggled to recall where she had seen him before. She knew she had, but where, she just couldn't remember. And now the startling news that the young man had bested Russell and Dickerson in a stand-up gunfight. Jane turned away from the window that overlooked the northern vastness of the PSR ranch lands. She just had time for a bath before Stratton and Potter and their wives came out for their monthly business and dinner meeting. But the face of the tall gunslick remained in her mind. She knew his name would come to her in time. Sheriff Dan Reese had gone through all his Dodgers twice, looking for anyone who resembled Buck West.
Nothing. Nothing.
But anybody that fast has sure got to have a back trail.
Yeah, but the trick is finding it. Russell and Dickerson are both hard men. Used to be, anyway. And they were both almighty quick. But this Buck West handled them as easily as children. And we're supposed to believe he just blew in here out of nowhere? One thing's for goddamn certain. Buck West is trouble.
So what do we do?
Maybe the best way to handle him is to get him on the PSR payroll. I'll talk to Richards about it first thing this evening.
Reese glanced up at the clock.
Right now, I gotta go shave and wash up. Get out to PSR headquarters.
10 miles south of the town of Barry, in the timber of the Lemhi Range, a dozen old mountain men had made their camp. As soon as they were set up, Preacher had changed ponies and headed east toward the Continental Divide and the Bitterroot Range.
Beartooth, Preacher told me at first light he wants me to head into Barry for a look-see. Pick up some bacon and beans and coffee and salt and keep my ears open.
Hell, Dupree, you better wash them ears out first. Probably get 5 pounds of dirt out of them.
You have no room to laugh, P.U. Last time you took a bath, it killed the fish for 5 miles downstream.
Nighthawk nodded seriously. Meanwhile, Buck West had just closed the gate of Miss Sally Reynolds' picket fence. They began their stroll to the hotel dining room. It was dusk. Sally was dressed in gingham, a bright summer color with matching parasol. The light, bright color set off her dark hair. She wore just a touch of rouge on her cheeks. Two carriages, accompanied by half a dozen outriders, rolled regally past them.
That's Wiley and Linda Potter in the first carriage. Keith and Lucille Stratton in the second carriage. They're going out to Josh Richards's. He lives on the PSR ranch. They have a monthly dinner and business meeting. The sheriff will be there too, I should imagine.
Same time every month?
Oh, yes. Very punctual and predictable.
Buck smiled at that, but his smile was only to hide his true inner feelings. and those thoughts were dark and dangerous.
You had that strange look in your eyes again, Buck, as though you were miles away.
Yes, I guess I was, Sally. I apologize for that.
Buck, are you here to slay dragons or tilt at windmills?
Beg pardon?
Are you familiar with Cervantes?
Is he a gun hand?
No, Buck, a writer.
No, I guess I missed that one. I know what slaying dragons means, but what's that about tilting windmills?
Oh, I suppose you're not. I didn't notice Sancho riding in with you.
I've never even had a Mexican sidekick, Sally.
No, I meant that... Oh, never mind. I have a copy of Don Quixote by Cervantes somewhere. I'll find it and loan it to you. I think you'd enjoy it.
All right.
Sally and Buck entered the hotel and crossed the lobby. Heads turned as they entered the dining room. Some dining there gave the young couple disapproving looks, but a few smiled. They took a table next to the wall, affording them maximum privacy, and Buck ordered supper for both of them. PSR beef, naturally, with boiled potatoes and beans and apple pie for dessert. Neither admitted it for separate reasons, but both wondered what might be taking place at the grand house of the PSR ranch at that very moment.
And was it a fair fight, Sheriff?
Stand up and square, Mr. Richards. I didn't see it, but Sam did. He said he ain't never seen nothing like that Buck West draw. Lightning fast. Neither Dickerson nor Russell got a shot off, and they drew first.
And he's a bounty hunter?
Stratton was a big man gone to fat. Diamond rings glittered on his soft, fat fingers.
That's what Jerry told me.
Jerry saw him fight back at the trading post. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Wiley Potter, like his two partners, had pushed his past from him. He almost never thought of his outlaw and trader days now. He was a successful man, a man under consideration to be territorial governor, and he played his political power to the hilt. He was always well-dressed, well-groomed. Josh Richards listened, but he had little to say on the subject of the bounty hunter Buck West. If this West was as good as described, Richards simply wanted him on the payroll. Of the three men, Richards had changed the least. Physically, he was still a powerful man, something he had always been proud of. That and his reputation with the ladies. But he knew it was time for him to think about settling down. And while Janie's reputation was a bit scarlet, she was nevertheless the woman he planned to marry. She was just as ruthless and cunning as Richards was. She'd do anything for money. They made a good team.
I'll see him in the morning. Let's eat. I'm hungry.
Now, Potter was big politically, the front man, all smiles and congeniality territory-wide. And Stratton was a local big shot, the president of the bank and so forth. But Richards ran the show, always staying quietly in the background, just the way he wanted it. Richards looked at Jane.
Something the matter, my dear?
That Buck West. I've seen him before. Somewhere.
Can you remember where?
Not yet, but I will. He's trouble, Josh.
Your imagination, my dear. He'd be a good man to have on our side.
I don't trust him.
You don't even know him, Jane.
Yeah, I do. I just can't remember where I met him, that's all.
Well, I'm sure it'll come to you.
Bet on it.
Buck walked down to the cafe in the coolness of the early morning. The eastern sky was just beginning to streak with silver, but the cafe was busy, the smell of bacon and eggs and frying potatoes filling the air.
Can I take your order?
If the food's as good as it smells, I'll take one of everything on the menu. The owner must make a fortune in this place.
The owner?
Yes. Are you the owner?
Not hardly, sir. Mr. Stratton is the owner. Mr. Stratton owns everything in Barry, every building and every business.
Everything?
Everything, sir. I'll be back with some coffee.
Buck mulled that one over in his mind. The waitress might think Stratton owned everything in sight, but Potter and Richards were right in there as well. Anyway, it was good news to Buck. It'd make things easier when he burned the damn place to the ground. Deputy Rogers plopped down in a chair facing Buck.
Mr. Richards wants to see you.
When I finish eating. Now go away.
Hey, Gunslick, I said...
I heard what you said. So did the entire crowd. I'll see Mr. Richards when I'm finished. Now go away.
Rogers wanted to start something. He wanted it so badly he could taste his rage. But he had orders to leave Buck alone.
God damn you!
Everyone was staring at Buck. Even the cook had stepped out and was staring in disbelief at him. Apparently, no one, absolutely no one, kept Mr. Richards waiting. Josh Richards stepped in. He nodded politely to the crowd and walked to Buck's table.
Ham and eggs, Ruby.
Yes, sir.
I'm Josh Richards. You don't much care for Deputy Rogers, do you, Mr. West?
I don't think he's got both hands in the stirrups, that's for sure.
Quaint way of putting it. I'll have to remember that. And you're right, Mr. West. Rogers is a bit weak between the ears. But he does what he's told to do.
That's important to you, Mr. Richards?
Very.
You know, if the money's right, I can be as loyal as any man. More than most, I reckon.
I imagine you can. Are you looking for a job, Mr. West?
I'm looking for Smoke Jensen, sir. But that gun hand's back trail is some cold.
Yes, I've had a lot of men looking for Jensen. So far, to no avail. Tell you what I'll do, Mr. West. I can put you on the payroll today, right now, fighting wages. Now, that's good money. 5 or 6 times what the average puncher makes. You hang around town, the ranch, just let your presence be known. Every now and then, I'll have a job for you. Sometimes, Mr. Stratton, Mr. Potter, and myself have to transfer large sums of money from place to place. Highwaymen have taken several of those pouches. I need a good man to see that it doesn't happen again. How about it?
When do I start?
Buck met Stratton and Potter briefly. It was all he could do to conceal his raw hatred from the men. He shook hands with them and smiled, nodding in all the right places. When the meeting was over, he returned to his hotel room and washed his hands with lye soap. They still felt dirty to him. He saw to his horses and found the livery boy true to his word. Both Drifter and the pack animal were getting extra rations of grain. He walked to town, getting to know the layout of Barry. As he walked, he noticed a buckskin-clad old mountain man leaning against the wall of the not-yet-open general store. The mountain man appeared not to be watching Buck, but Buck knew he was eyeing him. His name came to Buck, Dupree, the Louisiana Frenchman. He remembered him from the rendezvous at the ruins of Bent's Fort back in 66. Dupree looked as old as time itself, and as solid as a granite mountain. Buck had been raised among the mountain men, and he knew these old boys were still dangerous as grizzly bears. Not a one of the mountain men still left alive could tell you how many men they'd killed. When Buck again caught his eyes, Dupree was talking to the store manager. The two men went inside. Buck continued walking. Unlike most men who spent their lives on the hurricane deck of a horse, Buck enjoyed a good stroll. It was a pretty little town, not just thrown haphazardly together like so many frontier towns. He took his time, speaking to the men and doffing his hat to the ladies he passed. He noticed suspicion in many of the eyes, open hostility in a like amount. He wondered about that.
You're up early.
Sally Reynolds sat on her front porch, drinking what Buck guessed was coffee.
I enjoy the early morning, Sally.
So do I. Would you care for a cup of tea?
Tea?
Tea.
Sure, I guess so. I never acquired much of a taste for it.
I can make coffee.
No. Tea'll be just fine.
There you are.
Thank you.
The tea was not just fine. Buck thought he was gonna gag on the stuff. Didn't taste like much of anything he'd ever put to his mouth. But he smiled bravely and swallowed.
Please let me make you some coffee, Buck. It'll only take a few minutes.
Maybe you'd better. I sure would appreciate it. I don't reckon this tea and me are going to get along.
Buck sat alone on the small porch and watched as Dupree rode past, riding slowly, his Henry repeating rifle held in one hand across the saddle. The old mountain man nodded his head to Buck.
Nice morning, Nespa.
Yes, it is. Have yourself a good day.
My good days are 20 years down my back trail, but I still manage to get by.
Who in the world was that?
You probably read about them in school. Mountain men.
Oh, yes. But I thought they were all dead.
Most of them are. The real mountain men, that is. But there's still some old salty boys out there. Still riding high lonesome.
The high lonesome? That's beautiful, Buck. Do I detect a wistful note in your voice?
Wistful?
Means a longing or a yearning for something.
I guess so, Sally. I came out here just a boy, alone. I grew up in the mountains. Met a lot of mountain men. They were old men even then, but tough and hard as nails. They knew their way of life was about gone even then, but it was a fine way of life for them, not for everybody.
And for you, Buck?
For me? Do you mean did I enjoy it? Yeah, I'll get a burr under my saddle soon and you won't see me for several days. I'll have to shake the staleness of town off me, head for the high country, me and the horses. But I'll be back, if it matters to you, that is.
Yes, Buck. I think it does matter to me in a way that I can't explain. Not just yet. Buck, I'm a very perceptive person.
Oh, what kind of person?
Perceptive. That means I have a keen insight or understanding of things.
Terrible to be as ignorant as I am. And your insight tells you what about me, Sally?
That you don't fully trust me.
I don't fully trust anybody, Sally. Out here in the West, trust is something that has to be earned. It has to be that way because your life might depend on it.
Yes, I've heard that from several people since I've been out here.
It's true. You have a lot of outlaws working out here. You have a half dozen Indian tribes on the warpath. Long as you stay close to Barry, you probably won't have to worry about the Indians attacking. It's too big for them. But get a mile away from town, and your life is in constant danger. You've got to know the man or men you ride with. Will they stand with you or turn tail and run? See what I mean about earning trust?
Yes, I suppose so. I won't tell you what else my insights tell me about you, Buck. Not until I've earned your trust. Do you suppose that will happen?
I hope so.
Later, Buck rode north out of Barry, following the Salmon River. He headed for a small town called Salmon, a rough-and-tumble mining camp. He had no intention of going to Salmon. Buck just wanted to see if he was being followed. He wanted to test how much trust Richards had in him. Buck was back in the deep timber, hidden, watching his back trail. He was watching a half-dozen riders slowly tracking him. Using his spyglass, Buck pulled them into closer view. He knew their faces, having seen them loafing around Barry, but he didn't know their names.
Come on, horse. Let's follow these fellows and see what's what.
Buck rode deeper into the timber, making a slow circle, coming out of the timber behind the riders. Now he was tracking them. He wore an amused look on his face as he watched the gun hand slowly circling, having lost Buck's trail and trying to find it once again. Buck rode up to within 100 or so yards of the men and just sat his horse, waiting for the men to spy him.
Oh, crap! He's watching us, boys!
The PSR riders bunched and rode slowly toward Buck. The scar-faced man in the lead flashed an apologetic grin.
Hey, this ain't nothing personal, partner. We ride for the brand, just like you.
No offense taken, boys. Town was closing in on me. I wanted some space. You know what I mean?
Know exactly what you mean. We got biscuits and coffee, and it's about noon. Let's build a fire and jaw some.
Sounds good to me.
Cinches loosened, bits out, the horses ground reined, they grazed. The rider sat on the ground, munching biscuits and drinking cups of strong black coffee. Introductions were made all around. The scar-faced rider was Joyner. The oldest of the men, a hard-eyed puncher, was Wilson. Buck took an immediate dislike for Wilson, and he sensed the feeling was mutual. A man named McNeil had practically nothing to say, but he kept eyeballing Buck. The man's head was totally bald. A gentleman named Long was short and stocky. He wore one gun tied down low and his second gun in a shoulder holster rig. Davis was a long, lean drink of water. Looked like a strong wind would have blowed him slap out of the saddle. Simpson was just big and flat-out mean-looking.
You familiar with Brown's Hole?
Been there. Went there looking for Jensen. There's a grave close to the base of Zenobia Peak. Looks like that's where Jensen's planted his paw.
You dig the grave up?
Hell no.
Mayhaps that'd be where the gold is buried.
Now, how would a dead man do that?
I ain't thought about that. You're right.
A puzzle piece of the mystery plopped into place in Buck's mind. He recalled the letter that his father had written him before he died.
Son, I found some of the men who killed your brother Luke and stole the gold that belonged to the Gray. There's more of them than I first thought. I killed two of them that worked for them, but they got lead in me and I had to hightail it out. Came here. Not going to make it. Son, you don't owe nothing to the cause of the Gray, so don't get it in your mind you do. Make yourself a good life and look to my resting place if you need help. Preacher can tell you some of what happened, but not all. Remember, look to my grave if you need help. I also got word that your sis, Janie, left that gambler and is took up with an outlaw down in Arizona, a place called Tucson. I wouldn't fret much about her. She is mine, but I think she's trash. I don't know where she got that streak from. I'm getting tired. Seeing is hard. Light's fading. I love you, Kirby. Smoke. Pa.
Smoke had reread the letter.
Look to my grave if you need help.
He hadn't understood that part. Now, 5 years later, it all came back to him. His pa dug his own grave, put the gold in the bottom, and then crawled in on top of it to die. The old mountain man, Grizzly, had buried him. Well, the gold could just stay there. Damned if he'd dig up his own pa's grave for it.
Where else you been looking for this Smoke?
Name someplace. I thought I had him cornered over near Pagosa Springs, but he gave me the slip. I drifted down into New Mexico territory after him, but he was always one jump ahead of me. He's slick.
He'll screw up.
Mm-hmm. And when he does, I'm gonna be there.
The next day, Buck had reported to the PSR Ranch's business office. He had been informed that he was to make a delivery. The business manager, a sour little Scotsman named McGregor, had handed the saddlebags over to him. The canvas and leather saddlebags were flap secured by padlocks. Buck had not asked what was in the bags. He rode out at 9 that morning. Staying close to the timber, with the flats to his left, Buck let Drifter pick his own pace. About 10 miles out of town, he reined up and sat his horse. He rubbed his eyes in disbelief.
Good God, Drifter. Is that an elf on that spotted pony?
Buck walked Drifter slowly toward the site.
I think it is an elf.
Salutations! Judging from your slack-jawed facade, I conjecture you have made an erroneous assumption as to my identity. But since I care nothing for life in caves or other subterranean dwellings, I can assure you that I am not a troll.
A what?
Never mind, young man. My name is Audie. I, along with others of our vanishing breed, have made our meager camp just to the west of where we are now engaged in this somewhat less than loquacious confabulation.
Huh?
Oh, very well. How's this? Me and them there other boys who was pards with Preacher is camped over yonder.
Oh, all right. For a little fellow, you got a smart mouth, you know that?
Audie jerked out a .44 with the barrel sawed off short.
But I carry a very large friend, do I not?
I'd say so. Quick with it, too.
Did you think I might be an elf?
Well, sir, yeah.
How quaint. But given the fact that elves are rumored to engage in somewhat capricious interference in human affairs, and are generally represented in diminutive human form, I suppose your first impression might be forgiven. But I cannot for the life of me envision Grable as an elf.
Mr. Audie, I don't know what it is you just said.
Encapsulated, we are watching you. We will be there when you need us. Yeah.
What the hell? Drifter, I've seen the seasons change, birthing of human life, and I've been in love. but I ain't never seen nothing like that.
At No Name, Buck tied up in front of a building with the name PSR on the false front. Rex Augsman was painted on the door. Buck pushed open the door and stepped inside, pausing for a moment to allow his eyes to adjust to the dimmer light.
You Rex Augsman?
That's me.
You got some proof of that?
The man pointed to a diploma hanging on the wall. Mining engineer, Rex M. Augsman.
I'm from PSR headquarters up in Bury. I'm supposed to give you this.
You look like you might just have some sense. A definite improvement over the others.
Rex opened the padlocks and looked inside. He smiled.
Welcome to the team. You passed the final test.
What do you mean?
The engineer dumped the contents of the heavy saddlebags onto the counter. The bags had been filled with cut-up pieces of newspaper and lots of rocks.
The young man is not exactly a paragon of intelligence, but there is something about him that suggests there might be a glimmer of hope.
He's smart as a goddamn whip, you dwarf.
No doubt you speak non-prejudicially.
Don't you cuss at me. I'll wrap you upside the head.
Dupree grinned and walked to his bedroll. He pulled two clay jugs out of the blankets.
I think perhaps we have a drink or three.
Right, good idea. I can stand a taste myself. How about you, Nighthawk?
Buck had asked for a receipt for the newspapers and rocks. Back in Barry, he solemnly presented it to McGregor. The Scotsman looked at Buck, then looked at the receipt, and then a sour smile slowly formed on his lips.
You're a damn fool for staying, boy. I told Richards you were an honest man. That impressed him. But honest men won't last long in a town filled with scalawags and hooligans. Tell him I said it, if you wish. You've stepped into a snake pit, young man. There isn't a handful of people, men and women, in this town and surrounding area that is worth spit. Oh, I know why you're here, Mr. Kirby Jensen, a.k.a. Smoke, a.k.a. Buck West. You're here to avenge your wife, your son, your father, your friend Preacher. You're so full of hate it's consuming you, eating you alive. If you let it, boy, it'll destroy you.
How many others know who I am?
I think the redhead gunman, Sam, probably knows. Sam is quite like you, an honest man. The schoolteacher you've been sparking about, Sally, she probably suspects. Don't worry about me, Buck. I am a federal marshal.
How'd you know it was me?
McGregor pulled out a wanted dodger that he had on Smoke. He had cut off the hair and added a beard. It was eerie, almost like looking into a mirror.
Your skill and speed with your guns gave you away, Buck. What you planning to do here?
I'm going to kill Potter and Richards and Stratton and then burn this damn town to the ground.
Warn me before you start putting your suicidal plan into action, eh? I need to gather up my evidence and get out of here.
But you're a federal marshal, McGregor. Aren't you going to arrest me?
On what charges, Buck? I'm not aware of any federal charges against you. You haven't committed any acts of treason against the government of the United States. You haven't robbed any federal mints. You haven't assaulted any federal agents or destroyed any federal property. Hell, I personally hope you're successful in destroying the cesspool. Good day, Mr. West.
After cleaning up, Buck walked to Sally's house carrying a small package wrapped in brown paper. He found her working in the yard, planting flowers.
Did you have a good trip?
Oh, yes.
Buck held out the package.
Brought you something.
Sally waved him onto the porch and they both took chairs. She opened the package. 2 pounds of coffee.
I'll grind these beans to make some coffee right now. While it's perking, I'll clean up. It won't take me 5 minutes.
They chatted away the remainder of the morning. Sally fixed sandwiches for lunch. Then the two went for a stroll around town. A while later, Buck and Sally were resting on the cool banks of a creek.
Sally, I want to tell you something.
Sounds serious.
Might be. Sally, if I ever come to you and tell you to pack up and get out of town, don't question it. Just do as I say. It'll be because a lot of trouble is about to pop wide open.
If there is an Indian attack, wouldn't it be safer in town rather than outside of town?
It won't be Indian, Sally.
But there are children in this town, Buck.
I'm aware of that.
Are you saying the sins of the father are also on the head of the son?
No. Why would I think that?
Who are you, Buck?
Smoke Jensen.
Well, this cinches it. I've got a man I can trust. You agree?
Almost assuredly, Mr. Richards. I like the young man.
Richards gave his bookkeeper a sharp glance. A damn little sour man that never seemed to like anybody. But if McGregor gave his okay to Buck West, then Buck was all right. Joyner stuck his head in the office.
Boss, some range rider just reported a group of old mountain men gathering south and west of here.
Mountain men? That's impossible. All those people are dead.
No, sir. There's still a handful of them around. They're old, but they mean and crotchety and not to be fooled with. Dangerous old men. I've run up on them time to time, and Benson over to the general store reports that one was in his place about 3 days back, bought supplies and such.
Mountain men? No, why would those old characters be hanging around here?
Neither Richards nor Jerry noticed the faint smile on McGregor's face. The Scotsman now knew what Smoke was up to, and it amused him. But he cautioned himself silently. You damn sure don't want to be around when Buck and his friends lift the lid on Pandora's box. Best start making arrangements to pull out, and it isn't going to be long.
Don't know, boss. Just thought you'd want to know about it.
Yeah. All right, Jerry. Thanks.
Aren't you going to run away screaming in fear? After all, I'm the murderer, Smoke Jensen.
You took an awful chance telling me that.
Maybe I have some insight, too.
Yes, I suppose you do. Now tell me about Smoke.
Sally listened attentively for a full 10 minutes, not interrupting, letting him tell his painful story his way. Several times during the telling, he lapsed into silence. Then, with a sigh, he would continue. When he had finished, she sat on the cool creek bank, her long skirt a fan of gingham around her, and mentally digested all she had heard.
And to think I work for those creatures. I shall tender my resignation immediately, of course.
Stick around, Sally. The show's just about to begin.
What would you do if I told you I... Well, I'm quite fond of you, Buck.
What would you want me to do?
Well, you might kiss me.
Buck moved closer, and just as their lips touched...
Oh, now that's plumb sickening. Great big grown-up man a-mooning and sparking like some fiddle-footed kid. It's just disgusting.
Buck spun around on his feet in a crouch, his hands over the butt of his guns. His mouth dropped wide open.
Shut your mouth, boy. Flies is bad this time of year.
Preacher!
Yeah, well, I damn sure ain't Jedediah Smith. You know, we lost him back in 35, I think it was. You later he got married. One and the same if you's to ask me.
Buck ran toward Preacher and grabbed him in a bear hug.
Ah! Great God Almighty, put me down, you ox!
Buck dropped the old man to the ground.
I can't believe it. I thought you were dead.
Yeah, well, I damn near was, boy. Took this old body a long time to recover. Now, if you're all done slobbering on me, we gotta make some plans.
How'd you find me, Preacher?
Hell's fire, boy. I just followed the bodies. Can't you keep them guns of yours in leather?
Come on, Preacher. Tell the truth. I know you'd rather lie, but try real hard.
Now, you see how unrespectful he is, Missy. Can't a pretty thing like you do no better than the likes of this gun slick?
I'm going to change him.
Uh-huh. That's what that white wife of mine said, too.
White wife? You never had no wife except squaws.
Yeah, and that's all you know, you little pup. I married up with a white woman that was prettier than Simone Jules Dumont's mustache.
Heavens!
Simone Jules Dumont, also known as Madame Mustache, was either from France or a Creole from the Mississippi Delta region. It had never really been proven one way or the other. She showed up in California during the 1849 gold rush and had soon been named head roulette croupier at the Bella Union in San Francisco. Eventually, Simone had moved on to a livelier occupation, running a gambling saloon whorehouse at Bannock, Montana. It was there she's rumored to have taught the finer points of card dealing to Calamity Jane. And her mustache continued to grow, as did her reputation. She killed what's thought to be her first husband, a man named Carruthers, after he conned her out of a sizable amount of money. She moved on to Bodie, California, mustache in full bloom, and killed another man there when he and another footpadder tried to rob her one night. She lost most of her money in a card game on the night of September 6, 1879, and she passed on through the Pearlies that same night after drinking hydrocyanic acid.
Did you have any children from that union, Mr. Preacher?
Oh, darned if I know, Missy. I lit a shuck out of there one night. Walls was closing in on me. I heard she took up with a minister and went back east. But me, I teamed up with John Liver-Eatin' Johnston for a time. He lost his woman back in 47. He went plumb crazy for a while. Called himself Crow Killer. He killed about 300 crows, and then he ate the livers out of them.
I didn't think crows were good to eat, Mr. Preacher.
No, not the bird, Missy. The Injun tribe. You see, it was a bunch of crows on the warpath that killed Johnston's old woman. John never did like crows after that, so he ate a bunch of them.
You mean he was a cannibal?
Only as far as the liver went. He got to looking at me one night while we was camping in the Bitterroot. Right hungry look in his eyes. I took off. I ain't seen him since. Last I heard, old Crow Killer was a scout for the U.S. Army over on the North Plains.
I wish you'd gotten word to me that you were still alive, you old coot.
Well, I couldn't. I were plumb out of it for a couple of months. And by the time I could ride out of that Injun camp, the cold when the baby was dead and buried and you was gone. I'm right sorry about Nicole and the boy Smoke.
Yeah. Look, you better get used to calling me Buck, Preacher. You might slip up in town and that would be the end of it.
I ain't going into town. Well, not until you get ready to make your move, that is. Look, you want to get a message to me, Smoke. There's going to be a miserable-looking old Injun in town named Hunts Long. He's a flathead, wears a derby hat. He'll get word to me. Me and the boys was spotted last yesterday, so we gotta change locations. Oh, I heard you met up with Audie.
I thought I was seeing things. I thought he was an elf.
He's the furthest thing from an elf. That little man will kill you faster than you can spit. Yeah, all them boys is tough. Yes, sir, Smoke. You got some backup that'll be rode up strong when they writes about the berry and the berry. You got Tennessee, Audie, P.U., Nighthawk, Dupree, Deadlock, Powder Pete, Gray Bull, Beartooth, and Lobo. And Matt, too. And me. Of course, I'm a better man than all them combined.
P.U.? Why in heavens would you call a man that?
'Cause he's stinky.
I know Matt the Negro.
Yep, that's him. Old One Eye. All right, I'll be looking at you, Smoke. You take care now.
Preacher walked off into the surrounding woods and quickly disappeared. Sally looked at Smoke. A load seemed to have been removed from his shoulders. His eyes were shining with love, and he seemed to stand a little taller.
It's sad. When those men are gone, time will have passed, and it'll never be again.
That's not entirely true, Smoke Jensen.
Oh? What do you mean?
You'll be here to carry it on.
The day after seeing Preacher, Buck was sitting on the boardwalk in front of one of Barry's hurdy-gurdy houses, leaned back in his chair. A man and a woman and three children walked up the main street. The man and woman wore rags, and the kids looked as though they had not eaten in days. The ragged little band stopped in front of a large general store. Buck drifted over that way just as the red-headed cowboy, Sam, walked over from another direction. Buck and Sam looked at each other and nodded greetings.
Watch this. This might change your mind about the men you're working for and the sorry people in this town.
You get your money out of the same hand that pays me.
I don't have to like it, Smoke.
Do I know you from somewhere else?
I was in Cannon City when you and that old mountain man drew down on Ackerman and his boys. Took me a while to pull it all together, but I knowed I'd seen you before.
Why haven't you tried to collect the bounty on my head then?
I don't know. Mayhaps I'm having some second thoughts about the way my life's been going up to date. And then mayhaps I just want to hang around and see the show. Because I know when the time gets right, you're going to put on one hell of a show.
You going to watch my back?
I don't know yet, Smoke.
The ragged, emaciated-looking man was becoming clearly agitated as he talked to the storekeeper.
I'm begging you, mister, please. My kids are starving and my wife is worn out. I ain't asking for nothing for myself. Just a bite of food for my wife and kids. I'll work it out for you.
The storekeeper waved his broom at the ragged man.
Get on with you. Get out of here.
Go beg somewhere else.
I'll get down on my knees and beg you, mister. You gotta understand, engines ambushed the wagon train we was on. We didn't have time to circle. They split us up. Most of the others died. We lost everything, and we've been walking for days. Brother, can you find it in your heart to give my kids and woman something to eat?
Only if you got the money to pay for it. If you don't, then haul your ashes on, beggar.
A crowd was forming to watch the pitiful spectacle. Buck could not believe what he was hearing and seeing. But he knew he couldn't afford to step out of character. Not yet. He watched and waited.
There's a joy house down the end of the street. Why don't you put your woman in there? Clean her up some and she'll make enough money to get you going again.
That storekeeper poisoned his partner back in Illinois and stole his woman come out here. Real nice feller. Name's Burton.
The hotel manager stepped out. He waved his arms at the ragged little band.
You ne'er-do-wells, get out of here. That little girl looks like she's got the galloping consumption. No one here wants to catch that. You stir up the dust and get gone from here right now.
That's Morgan. Ran a hotel in Ohio until he burned it down. Killed several sleepers. Another real nice feller.
I just don't believe the heartlessness of these people.
You ain't seen nothing yet, partner. Stick around.
Reverend Necker was the next man to appear on the scene.
The Lord helps those who help themselves, but he frowns on shirkers. Now be gone with you.
Even the damn minister.
Oh, yeah. He's about as holy as you and me. Come from Iowa, so he says. He's a drunk and a skirt chaser.
The woman had gathered her children close to her and was fighting back tears. The man's shoulders were slumped in defeat. Sheriff Reese and Deputy Rogers walked up.
You vagabonds, keep on moving. Get going now, before I put a loop on y'all and drag you out of town.
I do not believe I'm saying this.
Sally pushed through the crowd. Her hot eyes found Buck and bored invisible holes into his heart. She swung her eyes back to the merchants gathered on the boardwalk.
What is the matter with you people?
Warn her off. You and me will get some grub and clothes for them people. Give it to them on the outskirts of town. But warn her off, Buck. That lady would stand up to an engine attack armed with a broom, I'm thinking. But right now, she's treading on dangerous ground.
You people should be ashamed of yourselves. Look at those children. Look at them. They're starving.
This ain't none of your business, Miss Sally. You're just going back home and tend to your knitting.
Well, I'll make it my business. You people come with me to my house. I'll give you a hot meal.
No, you won't, Miss Reynolds.
All heads turned to stare at Keith Stratton, mounted on a showy white horse.
What do you mean, Mr. Stratton?
Those people are losers, Miss Reynolds. No matter what or how much one does for them, they will be begging again tomorrow. Trash, that's all they are. All they'll ever be. And you don't own that house you're living in, I do. You are staying there rent-free, and you are paid to teach school, not meddle in town affairs. Now please leave.
And if I choose to stay?
You will neither have a job nor a place to stay.
Phew. Stratton just stepped into a pit full of rattlers, all dressed up in gingham.
I see. Will you allow me the time to gather up my personal belongings? Or do you intend to seize those along with the house?
You're about to make a very bad mistake, Sally.
There's quite a popular phrase out here, Mr. Stratton. It is said that out in the West, a person saddles their own horse and kills their own snakes.
I'm familiar with the saying.
Then I stand by that maxim, sir.
Stand by what?
Tell if I know.
You're a very foolish and headstrong young woman, Miss Reynolds. But if that is your decision, then you have 1 hour to gather up your possessions and vacate that house.
You people come with me.
Buck started toward Sally. She waved him back.
Oh, no. It appears you have made your choice, Buck. So long as you work for the other side, I do not wish to see you.
Sally winked surreptitiously at Buck. Buck hid his smile, knowing then what Sally was doing. She was jeopardizing her own position in order to strengthen his. The gal had guts. But where in the hell was she going to stay the night?